날 위해서라면 슬퍼도 기쁜 척할 수가 있어서 널 위해서라면 난 아파도 강한 척할 수가 있어서
Hello and welcome to another episode of BTS by the Book, a podcast that explores BTS through books about them, one chapter at a time. I'm your host, the BTS Bookworm. I call myself that, as you may have heard me say, because that is how my love and passion for the group BTS that's how it was born and how it grew. And so I didn't become a super fan through their music, videos, etc. I became a super fan through books about them. And so I am sharing that love, BTS plus books, with those of you who I believe also have the same interests. And if you are new to the podcast, I hope you will give the podcast a chance by listening to several episodes where I look at chapters from different types of books, because there are very different types of books out there about BTS, as I've discovered. And so you may listen to one episode and not like it at all, may listen to another and like it a lot. So please be patient and give us a chance. This episode was introduced by a few seconds from the song Fake Love, which has a direct tie-in to this chapter. This, like a number of chapters we've considered in the past, is not a section that deals a lot with BTS's music, so there aren't many tracks or songs mentioned. This one happens to be, I think, the only song mentioned in the entire chapter. And that's because the chapter is focused, like I said, not on the music, but on the fandom. This is the second time we're looking at the book BTS and Army Culture, which came out in 2019. The author's name is Ji-Heng Lee. And Lee is, at least at the time of the writing of the book, teaching film at Chung-Ang University. And she's a member, or was a member at that time, of the film subcommittee for the Korea Media Rating Board. So she has a good background in things that I believe are important for providing good, solid info on the Korean music industry, and then of course BTS as a part of that. This book, if I'm not mistaken, is available only in digital formats. I don't recall seeing any hard copy, paperback, hardback editions, but the digital copies are readily available. I would encourage you to pick one up. If you're a fan of BTS and you consider yourself a part of ARMY culture, you would find this presentation very fascinating. The book has seven chapters. Previously, we looked at a chapter regarding the language barrier. Today, we're looking at chapter two from the book, which is simply entitled Voting Culture. I was drawn to that because that's a potentially controversial topic regarding not just BTS fandom, as we will learn from this chapter, but certainly is a part of BTS fandom. And I would say this book has a paragraph-to-picture ratio of 10 to 1. P-to-P ratio is something I've mentioned a time or two. That's my way of letting you know briefly how much photographic content there is in the book versus information content, sentences, paragraphs, for example. So the first P is paragraph, second P is pictures, or it could be photos, P to P. 10 to 1, which is my way of saying this is almost entirely text and information, and no photos that I've seen at all. So it's my kind of book. It's a perfect fit for the podcast for sure. According to my count, there may be approximately a dozen photos total in the book, in the whole book. So compared to most books dealing with BTS, that's hardly nothing. Hardly worth mentioning. I do like to begin a lot of these episodes by sharing some information from the introduction of the book to provide a little background or context for what the author is trying to do with the book as a whole. And this book has a lengthy preface from the author, and there are a few sentences worth quoting here. I like this quote earlier in the preface. Quote, "We are witnessing in real time how every move by BTS is becoming the history of Korean pop music," end quote. I love that quote because, as you've heard me say, and maybe you felt it, I believe we're watching history in the making with BTS. And anytime an author will make note of that, I appreciate it. Another quote from the following paragraph. "If research is to approach something through objectivity and tested theories, this book can be understood as a work of criticism for general readers written by an ACA fan." That's capital A-C-A hyphen capital F-A-N, ACA fan, which means academic and fan, who lets her affection shine through. Continuing with the quote, "BTS and ARMY culture illuminates how ARMY, which is a kind of imaginary community of BTS-loving fans, has created epistemic distance towards standard K-pop culture and cements BTS's status in global mainstream music via tangible fan practices." I'm going to stop there with a quote, because that phrase, tangible fan practices, is what this book is all about. We looked weeks ago at the language aspects of tangible fan practices. And one tangible fan practice would involve the very quick, very accurate translations of Korean language content for mostly English-speaking fans. That's a tangible fan practice. We're looking at voting this week, which is another tangible fan practice. Okay, continuing with this quote. "To this aim, I analyze social media and online fan communities that serve as discursive spaces for ARMY, and observe in particular how ARMY forges BTS's cultural status by compromising and negotiating with mass media that hold cultural power," end quote. I do want to read one more line from the preface before moving on to our chapter. I really appreciate this, and I'll try to unpack it a little bit. She says this book, quote, "resembles an archival document that captures the dynamics of ARMY in the contemporary cultural landscape," end quote. So the focus of this book is not on BTS as much as ARMY. I want to make that clear. Most books that I consider for this podcast are not like this book. I felt like it was close enough to focusing on BTS to bring it to our attention. It's hard to distinguish between BTS and ARMY, and BTS might feel the same way about that because there's such an intimate relationship with their fan base. So I hope you'll allow for this occasional diversion from BTS to the fan base, primarily. But I love the phrase that has to do with this, what she calls archival document. That may not mean something to everybody listening, but the way I view it as a librarian is this author, she wrote in around 2019, she was attempting seemingly to provide a snapshot, almost like a photograph of how ARMY was functioning when she wrote the book, so that 20, 30 years from now, people could look back when BTS has long retired and is no longer a group. It's sad to think, but it's inevitable. We could look back and know what the fandom of BTS was like in and around 2019 and some of the years immediately preceding. That's what the author is trying to do. Just provide this snapshot and preserve it for all time, basically. And so the question for today is, what snapshot is the author providing regarding voting and the what she calls the voting culture in and around ARMY? Okay, so I think after a setup here and a description of the context and what the author is trying to do, she basically turns her attention to some voting practices that aren't overly negative, and then turns her attention to voting practices that are clearly more negative in orientation. And so we will tackle those things in that order, just like the author has done. I would say approximately this chapter has includes 7 to 8 pages worth of content. Like I said, it's an online digital type book, and it's always hard with some of those books to tell how many pages we're actually talking about, but I would say 7 to 8, probably closer to 8. This chapter begins with a paragraph answering the question, how do fans of BTS become fans and find content that keeps them coming, keeps them hooked, keeps them plugged in with the group? And 3 online platforms are mentioned. These are no surprises to anybody: YouTube, Twitter, and VLive. Those are 3 things that the author mentions, at least briefly, in paragraph 1. I want to read a quote that begins paragraph 2. Quote, despite the breadth of platforms, there is one occasion that brings all fans together to join forces for a unified goal: award show voting. End quote. And that's the key sentence that sets up everything else that follows. If there's one time that all the fans, no matter how you found, discovered BTS, no matter what keeps you hooked, what keeps you plugged in, whether it's YouTube mainly, Twitter, VLive, or a combination, what brings everybody together for this short, relatively short period of time to unify the focus and the work, etc., it's award show times. The author makes a fairly broad brush type of statement that I'd like to read. As the winners are generally decided by the outcome of a 1 to 2 month long voting period, online voting is a war that tests the persistence, organization, and real strategic ability of each fandom, end quote. I consider that a broad brush statement, because I think this would have been the perfect time for the author to say something like, many of the awards that BTS has won have not been voting type awards. They're not popularity type awards. So I think it would have been helpful at this point for the author to distinguish between the types of awards that BTS has won and it has been up for, that are the voting type, and then the others that aren't voting types, because there are multiple kinds. It would have been helpful, I think, to people who are new to the fandom especially, to know that not every award BTS has won has been a popularity contest type of award. Not every award they've won has been based on how many tweets or whatever the fan base can churn out. Any hints that there are in this chapter about that are so subtle that at least I didn't discover them. And so I just want to make it clear that what the author is talking about here in this chapter are strictly the awards that have a voting component. I know there may be some awards that have kind of a multi-layered approach, and one layer might be the voting and another layer might be something more objective, data-driven. But make no mistake, her focus is going to be on the awards that involve a voting component. As I said a moment ago, this chapter is broken into two parts, and this first part is going to be what I would consider the not very negative aspect of voting culture. We're going to save the negative for the next section. This first section is called hashtag voting, and it begins with what I would call a six paragraph, which is very long, a six paragraph anecdote. Which is just, it's not anything based on research. It's just kind of something that the author has observed. It's a standalone incident that the author, I believe, is sharing with her readers because it does reflect some of the things she's trying to focus on here. So that's why I call it an anecdote. There may be one paragraph, kind of an interlude, a side point type thing within this extended anecdote, but six paragraphs are devoted to the anecdote. And the anecdote story illustration is the 2018 iHeartRadio Music Awards. So that's the focus here. And in that year, BTS was nominated for two categories, Best Boy Band and Best Fan Army. That's what the author's sharing here. Quote, I'm not familiar with the iHeart Radio Music Awards. I've only heard about them in passing. But these are the two categories she mentions. Quote, Best Boy Band and, quote, Best Fan Army. And then in the next paragraph, this is a slight interlude, but I guess she's using it as a backdrop for what's to follow. There's talk here about the large, you know, world record type following that BTS enjoys through Twitter, especially in Korea. As of May 2019, the author states BTS counts over, quote, 20 million followers regarding with Twitter. There's talk in the next sentence about tweets that mention President Trump when he was president in the U.S., who had just seemingly countless, endless followers on Twitter, and then Justin Bieber, who also has millions of followers. You combine the two of them, Trump and Bieber, and that still accounts for less than half of tweets that mention BTS and the BTS account that the group itself manages, which is at BTS_TWT. And so, all that's to say, there's a lot of power found there. And so back to the iHeart Awards anecdote. So the author states that initially the Army, and I'm just going to use that term because the author uses it too, but obviously a lot of people who vote, who probably voted that year for BTS with the iHeartRadio Awards, a lot of them may not have officially been a part of ARMY. So I just want you to know that that's probably what's going on behind the scenes, but the author simply refers to them as ARMY. She basically says that fans, BTS fans, assumed initially that it would be, in her words, a piece of cake. A piece of cake when it came to vaulting their favorite group, BTS, to the top first place position of these awards. But they found that it wasn't so easy after all. She goes on to talk about that. Firstly, with the Best Fandom Award for that year. The next two paragraphs in this chapter talk about that. What about the Fandom Award? She says the main threat, quote, was EXO hyphen L. XOL, which would be the group EXO's version of ARMY, the fandom of EXO. Another Korean idol group who I'm sure you've heard of. Now, it's that fandom that competed quite fiercely with BTS for this award that year. There's a reference in the next paragraphs to global, that is, not Korean, superstars like Beyonce or One Direction. There's a reference to their fandoms coming together to vote when needed for awards, for example. But there's a phrase here that certainly seems to be true, and that is, quote, nobody could possibly beat K-pop fandoms, end quote. There's just something about K-pop fans. When they come together, there's no competing with them. In other international scenes, music scenes. It has become the norm, according to the author, in K-pop fan culture for fans to, quote, stream newly released singles and album tracks in an infinite loop in order to cascade them at the top of the charts, end quote. She does talk about there being almost a warfare-like mentality when it comes to award show seasons, especially at the end of the year, each year. And some of the, I think she's talking about some of the phraseology that's used among K-pop fandoms. You know, it sounds almost warlike. It's taking the competition to a warlike level, seemingly, in their mind. Then she gets back to the specifics regarding this fandom award with the iHeartRadio awards. She says, because the rules limited votes to 50 a day per Twitter account, she talks about how ARMY followers registered multiple Twitter accounts in order to stay within the rules but still vote as much as possible. And after, quote, finishing the daily quota, they logged onto Instagram to vote another 50 times. And then onto Facebook to vote for another 50 times. And she ends her quote by saying, ARMY adhered to this exhausting daily routine for 2 entire months. And she mentions a couple of times in this chapter a phrase that she puts quotation marks around, voting hell, which I presume was a phrase that was mentioned multiple times back then by ARMY, who, you know, they ended up being triumphant, but it was a lot of work. So I guess that's what the hell reference is referring to. And this is a behind-the-scenes look at something I'm not that familiar with, you know, multiple Twitter accounts, using Facebook, using Instagram to max out the number of votes any one person can log. And I think that's an interesting behind-the-scenes look. The author doesn't get critical with that. And I think it's because all of this is within, certainly within the rules. There's nothing illegal about it or underhanded. All she's trying to do is let people like us know this is what's going on. This is how passionate the fans are. And the author doesn't get critical with that, and I appreciate that. She's just stating facts. This is what's going on, in case you didn't know. Now, not every army is doing it, obviously, but certainly plenty of them are. She then talks about how the Best Boy Band nomination went that year for that awards show. And she spends two paragraphs talking about that. She describes this period as a 60-day marathon, which would be the time period allowing for votes for this. And the only true contender in this category was the Latin American band called Cinco, or capital N, sorry, capital C-N-C-O, C-N-C-O. And although the race for first in this category wasn't nearly as intense as the Best Fandom Award, it was clear, according to the author, that, quote, despite the vast size of army, this 60-day marathon could only be won with consistency, that is, by voting diligently like it were daily homework, end quote. So in other words, BTS fans couldn't just sit around and wait, or do a little bit of voting and knowing that that would be enough. They had to stick to it. Maybe not as intensely as they did with the Best Fandom Award, but they had to do some daily homework. It was a daily consistent type thing. And then there's this interesting reference to when ARMY fans in Asia finished their daily quota of voting, and then it was time for them to go to bed because it was nighttime and all, it was time for the other half of the global army to take up where the Asian half left off and do their part during the day. While, in other words, while Asian army fans were asleep, it was time for the Western fans to wake up and take up where the Asian fans left off. And I don't think about that often enough, but with the definitely the global nature of ARMY, I imagine that does happen. Even though I don't think about it, it does happen. I mean, when one group's asleep, the other group's awake and they're doing their part, and so it's just an all day, every day thing because of that global nature. When BTS did win Best Fandom, RM tweeted, and this is a quote in English, a translation in English, something worth sharing, and the author does share it here. She shows the Korean original tweet and then a translated version. This is from the tweet by RM. Quote, since the award is for Best Fandom, we truly and sincerely believe that ARMY, not BTS, is the sole owner of this award, end quote. So obviously RM is quick to recognize how this all came about and giving sole credit to ARMY for winning the award. And so I feel like that was worth sharing and definitely appropriate. The next paragraph talks about the various forms voting took during this iHeart race. One, she mentions global stats being shared on an hourly basis that reflected vote counts. So people were able to keep up that way. She talked about how some armies in various countries created voting team accounts. She mentions in an effort to make voting more fun, that various creative ideas were shared amongst army. That was in the context of probably voting team accounts. And then she talks about, obviously, individual armies just doing their own thing, not in teams or groups. And she does mention that BTS did win Best Fandom, and they did win Best Boy Band as well by more than 100 million votes. She talks next in this section about, this is just another anecdote in my opinion, in other words, just another occasion, story, illustration she wants to focus on, the Top Social Artist Award from 2017, which is one of the Billboard Music Awards, and it's one that involves a voting component. So, this was the year that BTS displaced Justin Bieber, who had won the award multiple times since its beginning, if I'm not mistaken. And there are 2.5 paragraphs devoted to this here, this anecdote. And I appreciate some of the perspective here, considering this is a I guess compared to iHeartRadio, this Billboard version of an award show is viewed as more Western in orientation. And there are hints here by the author that one reason that ARMY is especially motivated when it comes to Western-specific, Western-based awards, like U.S. awards, how they are motivated because they perceive that a group like BTS from Korea is probably not getting the attention they deserve. And that's a very historical, traditional view. You know, the U.S., for example, not giving nearly as much attention to international groups as they do their own groups. And so this provides even more motivation for ARMY, is what the author is saying here. And she's not saying it's a bad motivation. In fact, you could say it was a good one, you know. But the author just doesn't weigh in on that per se. But she does have this quote, quote, their intrinsic motivation, this is ARMY's motivation during this Billboard voting phase, their intrinsic motivation was to give the world an opportunity to see BTS. As any ARMY knew from personal experience, just one look would be enough to charm the world, end quote. And I really appreciate the author making statements like that because, you know, she's not talking about the negative aspects of voting now. She's talking about the positive ones or the not negative ones. And this is one of those not negative things. If you were a fan of BTS, you love them. You know why you love them for all the right reasons. You just want more people to love them. You want more people to discover them. And what better way to let people discover them, especially, you know, halfway around the world from Korea, especially if you're a Korean fan, than to help them win an award. And then when they win the award, sometimes, which might lead to them showing up on the award show, making an appearance, more people will discover them, more people will fall in love with them, and that's what you want. You want to share the love. And so the motivation is coming from a good place, is what the author's, I think, trying to say here. She says that voting for the Billboard Music Awards took the form of, quote, tweeting hashtags on social media, which was a great fit for Army, she observes. They worked, she said, tirelessly every day by voting and urging others to vote. Quote, continuing the quote, if their Twitter accounts became locked due to excessive tweeting, they simply created new accounts, which is perfectly legal. There's no hint here that someone's breaking the rules or even bending the rules or cheating. It's just what people did. Kind of behind the scenes look again. There's talk in the next paragraph about who tended to vote for BTS contenders for this award. Again, this is the 2017 Billboard Awards, a top social artist, and she states that fans of other K-pop artists who weren't up for the award seemed to join forces with some other fans of other groups to vote for other contenders, even if they didn't really like those other contenders or they weren't huge fans of them. Theirs, they still voted for them because they did not want BTS to do well in this category. So there's talk here about how they came together. And I can only imagine that might look like, you know, fans of another K-pop group joining up with Justin Bieber fans. Even if they weren't Bieber fans, they voted for Bieber so that BTS might not win. I think that's what this the author is trying to get at here. But it's all about the votes because this was a voting, there's a large voting component with this category. And then she talks, the last half of the last paragraph of this section, there is a reference to fake love, which is what we heard a few tidbits from a moment ago. She talks about how the Army and fandom of BTS in general, they didn't want to just, the next year Billboard occurred, they didn't want to just vote for BTS to win an award. They actually wanted BTS to appear on the show, do something live, some kind of performance. She talks about how their wish was granted in 2018. They did appear, and then they performed Fake Love. But that doesn't seem to involve voting here. She doesn't talk about how that came about as a result of voting, but maybe there was plenty of chatter about it. She doesn't say one way or the other online by fans of BTS. And there's one last mention of BTS winning the 2019 Billboard Music Award for Top Duo Group. But there's no talk about voting there. It's just a mention. The second major section of this chapter, and the last, is where everything shifts from just a description of various behind-the-scenes approaches to voting with no critique to a very harsh critique, because this is the section called The Dark Side of K-Pop Voting Culture. And I've underlined the word K-Pop here because from reading this, it seems to be the focus is on K-Pop and Korea specifically. So if I had to sum up this next section, I would say the author's perspective is that the dark side of voting culture is mostly found, maybe not totally, mostly found in Korean settings, and K-pop specifically. So to sum up the first section, I would say the author is describing fierce but friendly competition, but nothing horrible or bad or sinister, just fierce competition, all within the rules. And I also found enlightening from this first section that it was nice to be reminded that this voting passion is not unique to BTS fans. It's not unique to ARMY. I mean, other fandoms have their own fans who join together and maybe create Twitter accounts in order to get as many votes out there as possible. That's what I appreciate about this first section. So in case you want to point a finger at BTS, read that first part and realize that this is not unique to them. And BTS shouldn't, ARMY shouldn't be punished just because they're more global and much larger than other fan groups. That's the only thing you could say in the end. They're doing what the other groups are doing. They just have more people to do it. So what are you going to do about it? So anyway, let's turn to the dark side now. There's a statement, generally speaking, at the beginning that says, "Unfortunately, voting is not always a force for good." Continuing the quote, "The underlying fan culture considers an idol group's achievements to be a measure of one's success as a fan." I appreciate the author saying that because I wish it wasn't true, and I believe the author wishes it wasn't true. It just is true. People take it personally as a fan when their group, and she's trying to focus on the idol. She refers to idol. She's certainly talking about musicians in the K-pop world. Those fans are maybe in an unhealthy way linked with their group. Now, that's not what the author is saying here. That's just what I'm getting from this. That it would be nice if it wasn't true, but it is true. Fans take it hard personally when their favorite groups don't do well, especially around when it comes to awards and winning them. She talks about another aspect that makes this even more intense. The fact that idols' career in K-pop are so short, in part by military duty, mandatory military duty, physical aging, they get too old very quickly, and then there's a lot of competition involved too. So all this means that whatever group you are especially passionate about, they have a very short lifespan, typically. So you're going to put your heart and soul into helping them do well during that very short amount of time, okay? And so that's another aspect of this that the author is, I believe, claiming. This is why the dark side is happening, because of some of these underlying factors. Then she turns her attention. You know, without that context we just talked about, without fans taking it personally when their groups don't do well, without the very short career lifespans of K-pop groups, Korean award shows can't take advantage of that if it wasn't there. But since it is there, this author turns her attention to how Korean award shows take advantage of that. And so almost the entire rest of this chapter deals with specifically Korean award shows, not international award shows. The only time she mentions international award shows in this section is to contrast, provide a contrast. She states very clearly in the next paragraph that Korean award shows are, quote, after easy money, end quote. And she makes this all about the money, pretty much. And I'm not saying this is her fault. This, I believe she's just stating facts here. And that is the way the world works, unfortunately. There's maybe nothing conspiratory going on or truly evil here. They just want to make money. And so people who have the business acumen and the smarts, I suppose, are the ones who are coming up with these unfair voting aspects to their award shows. But their motivation, make no mistake, seems to be money. And she gives some examples right away of what that looks like. And I want to read this. Well, I won't read it as a quote. I've already quoted a lot. But these are all tied to Korean music awards specifically, which might involve downloading a voting app, which means you can't even vote unless you have the app. And then when you have the app, you often have to watch an advertisement of 15 to 30 seconds, she says. you might have to download a game app. Or, she says, you might have to install a suspicious, quote, financial services app in order to earn a vote, end quote. So those are all things that are tied to these Korean Music Awards. I would say often, maybe not always. But then she mentions, for the first time, the pay-to-vote option. And the way she describes it here is, if you want to bypass some of the advertisements or maybe haven't the compulsory downloads of apps, you can simply pay to vote. And she goes on to say that people might not want to do that normally, but especially if the competition is close between your favorite K-pop group and another K-pop group, you may do something you wouldn't normally do. You wouldn't normally want to pay for voting, but you'll do it because the competition is so fierce. And the author uses the word psychologically because it is a psychological thing. And unfortunately, it seems that Korean award shows play on that psychological component. So it's hard to resist adding more votes, and you're more willing to pay in order to make that happen. She says, in a very straightforward way, quote, the pay-to-vote option takes advantage of this fan mentality and is nothing but a scam that profits from holding award shows. And she goes on, end quote, she goes on to say she doesn't see this type of option for award shows in other settings, overseas, outside of Korea. And she says that it's hard for her to believe that this can continue. But yet it does in many respects. She talks about how many of these people who are targeted by these approaches are teenagers. They're kids. And yet they have money available to them. And so these Korean award shows, maybe they don't intend for it to happen, but it does happen. So many of the people who may opt for the pay-to-vote option may be teenagers and who are not wise when it comes to the way they spend their money and are huge super fans of these groups. And there's a lot of psychology involved in that connection. And so that's a bad combination. And they're probably the ones who are more willing to do things than older voters, more mature voters. And some of the apps she describes that are forced download type things may be very harmful. She talks about prostitution apps or apps that involve casino ads, which are very inappropriate for teenagers. And yet they're a part of the process in many cases. The first specific award show she mentions in this section, the first anecdote here of, I think there are three anecdotes that are coming. This is the first one regarding the Seoul Music Awards in early 2019. And that award show involved downloading a particular app or watching an ad or paying an option to pay to be able to vote for the popularity award. These are her words. One of the apps she refers to from that particular award show that year turned out to be what she calls a prostitution app. And once that was discovered and more people started to complain, I suppose, that problem was addressed. And she doesn't provide specifics of how it was addressed exactly. But she does say around this time, not only ARMY, but other fandoms under the umbrella of K-pop, got together, and this was new to me. A group called the Union of K-Pop Fandoms was convened, she says. I don't know if it was formed at this time or just convened, but it was seemingly a response to this Seoul Music Awards story. She says this was the first time that various fandoms, quote, had united in boycott against a voting method that is socially harmful, end quote. I thought that was neat to hear about and read about. She does say that because of some loopholes in Korean laws, that many, she says, Korean award shows still retain, quote, their methods, referring to some of the unhealthy methods already talked about in the podcast. The next paragraph refers to something that was also new to me, quote, a Korean Wave Popularity Awards, which she says were created to reflect more global following and attitudes regarding K-pop groups. And Korean Wave obviously has to do with outside of Korea-type popularity. So this was an effort by some Korean producers or creators to include voting from non-Korean type fans. But why is this in the dark side section? Why is this in the negative section? Because, according to the author, this involved many Korean fans using VPNs, these virtual private networks, to disguise their IP addresses so that it looks like they're voting from non-Korean locations. And by doing so, which VPNs are commonly used, you don't have to be an expert in any way to use them, purchase them, make use of them. In the end, all of these votes, which looked international, many of them were probably not, because of this disguising that was going on. And so the author doesn't call this cheating. She does use the word cheating later on in the paragraph, but directly related to this, that's the word that came to my mind, cheating. Maybe it's not illegal, but it certainly could be considered cheating. There's a quote I want to read here related to this, quote, thus, Korean Wave Awards and the like are never intrinsically different from Korean Popularity Awards and betray the purpose of honoring nominees based on nominal merit, end quote. She does go on to describe that the most discouraging thing about all of this is the organizers' attitudes regarding all this. They know what's going on, but don't do much to prevent it, is what she's saying here. And that's disappointing to her and certainly others as well. She does compare this, though, to award type shows outside of Korea who do a better job at regulation. This is anecdote number two in here from 2017 involving Harry Styles and how this was a Billboard chart type award and how various news agencies picked up on the fact that some of his fans were using VPNs to vote outside of their home country to make it look like they were voting from elsewhere. And the backlash was fairly harsh. I don't know how official the backlash was, but it certainly wasn't flattering. And the author, I think, uses that as an anecdote, as an example of how the systems are regulated better outside of Korea, seemingly. And that's one example of that. Anecdote number three has to do with the Golden Disc Popularity Award, which, from what I gather, is another Korean-based award. In 2019, there was a hacking incident that the author mentions here. She mentions that the hacking didn't require a professional expertise to even pull off. She describes this hacking job as being a product of, quote, mere idle fandom. She does go on to say, make some comments that seem to give these people the benefit of the doubt, meaning they probably weren't fully aware how illegal this activity was. They may have just been, you know, messing around or almost in a practical joke, prank type of way. And in their mind, it may have been completely harmless. And yet she does conclude that paragraph by making it very clear that it, even though they may not have recognized how illegal it was, it certainly would be considered illegal what they did. She does make mention in passing of fandoms making use of what she calls questionable methods that trick poorly designed voting systems, such as using the Chrome browser's secret mode that enables unlimited times of votes, end quote. Now, I'm not familiar with that. Maybe some of you are, but she seems to lump that in with the hacking approach that affected the 2019 Golden Disk Popularity Awards. And I do want to add just my thoughts. It does seem like the author isn't accusing these people of doing something that they believe is truly illegal. They don't have malicious or illegal intent as they're doing these things, but she still would put the end product or the activity in the violation of the law category, seemingly. Last paragraph has two sentences back to back I want to read. One has to do with the good or the not bad discussed in this chapter, and the second sentence has to do with the dark side. So, sentence one, quote, "In conclusion, I still believe that the affection of fans is a force for good. All they want is for their idols to gain status in the jungle of the K-pop industry, which can be helped by winning awards and seeing them mentioned in the news," end quote. I want to stop there and just say I appreciate the number of times the author does say that. I mean, you could tell she's not only an academic researcher type reporting on the facts, she's also a fan, as she did make clear in the preface of the book. But she's saying that's all they're trying to do. That's all fans are trying to do. There's this jungle out there with so much stiff competition. And if you're a fan of one of these groups in that jungle, you just want to help them out. That's all you want to do is just help them out. And so that she is stating something from her personal perspective and opinion that I think does hit the nail on the head, so to speak. But here's the not so great part of all this. Another quote to end with. "Rather," she says, "the real problem lies elsewhere. Korean award shows are devoid of commercial ethics and exploit the innocent affection of fans in return for unfairly sought profit," end quote. So here she's putting the blame not on the fans like you and me. She's putting the blame on the creators of the problem, those who are responsible for Korean award shows. So she's putting the blame solely on the Korean award show market and on the creators of that, including people who don't seem to care too much about regulating them in a responsible way. And so I appreciate that perspective and the way she does take much of the blame off the fans. And I do think that, personally, I think that's appropriate as well. So the dark side is in the realm of those who are in power and in positions that could change things if they wanted to, but sadly are not, at least not enough. There is a hopeful comment at the very, very end of this chapter. She says she hopes the Korean award show organizers will finally, quote, realize that the only way to increase their own repute is to stop paid voting and to instate a strict set of voting rules, end quote. I love the way she ends with that. Very hopeful. Don't we all hope for something like that? So just a very insightful behind-the-scenes look at this voting culture. You know, a lot of the books I've encountered thus far will mention it maybe in a paragraph, a few sentences, but I love the way this chapter just expands on that tenfold with a lot of good, helpful, balanced information and perspectives. As always, I would like to encourage you loyal listeners who appreciate this program to show your support for me and this podcast by showing your support in a financial way to a group that deserves it, needs it way more than I do. It's a group called Books for Africa. They've been trying to end the book famine in Africa, which is a major thing, been going on for decades and decades. And they've been doing so since 1988. A really wonderful group. I have no ties to them. I have nothing to gain from telling you to go visit their website, booksforafrica.org. Visit their website. See what you think. If you like what you see, please consider making a donation to them. And if you do, let me know about it by emailing me a simple little message at btsbythebook@gmail.com. Please use that email address to ask me questions, make comments, negative, positive, or recommend books in English that you haven't heard me talk about yet. Again, that's btsbythebook@gmail.com. And lastly, do consider supporting authors like Miss C. Lee, sorry, like Miss Lee, who have written really wonderful books like this. Let them know you support the book industry portion, which is a small portion of the BTS world, the BTS umbrella. Let them know that you are fans of their work and you support what they're doing. Maybe as a result, we'll get more people writing good, solid, substantive works about BTS, which I think will make us all very, very happy in whatever language you may be speaking. Anyway, that's all for this episode of BTS by the Book. Thank you again for joining me. I look forward to visiting with you again very, very soon as we look at another chapter from another book about our favorite group, BTS.